teaching of Islam. And I said there's different forms of this secularization. One of those forms, just one, that we're facing today, we see it more, is the fact that everyone is entitled to an opinion when it comes to this field of study. And some people might get offended, might get upset when they are told or when it is said that you are not entitled to an opinion. They might get upset. It's perfectly fine because we're growing up here in an environment that is secular, that is directly, indirectly, subliminally telling us and giving us permission to have an opinion regarding anything, almost. Well, as I said yesterday, as I read some verses for you, some ahadith, we don't have that permission when it comes to Islam, because what Islam has to do with is the akhirah of people. The akhirah of people cannot be compromised. To the extent that, I didn't say this last night, let me say it now. We have ahadith that the ma'sumin say, if someone gives a fatwa or a verdict without ilm, without knowledge, without certainty and conviction, and it even turns out to be right, subhanAllah, they ask you something Islamic, you say, you give them the answer, you give a verdict. Now this, you could say, mostly has to do with legal issues, ahkam. Someone says, I think this is haram, and as a matter of fact, or I think this is halal. And as a matter of fact, it is halal. In the knowledge of Allah, it was halal. But Allah says, I look at this person and I want to see, is he giving a verdict, an opinion, when he has ilm and he's giving it, or no? If the answer is no, he didn't have ilm, he says, okay, then that's disobedience of me. Even though what he said turned out to be right. Interesting. So what counts, do the ends justify the means when it comes to Islam? No, they don't. Not at all. Not at all. Sometimes you feel like Allah is sitting back and just watching. And He's just like, He just wants to see how obedient we are. He doesn't care really, okay, did it turn out right? Did it not turn out right? Of course He does care. I'm just saying, it seems as if what really matters to Him is to see how obedient of a servant I have. Because at the end of the day, وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنْسِ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ, I created you to serve me. That's what I'm after. So it turned out to be right. So what? You disobeyed me by giving an opinion when you didn't have certainty. But the secular world, what is it telling us? It says you can do this. And to an extent, it's not a bad thing. But akhirah is not something to play with. That's why bid'ah is so frowned upon when it comes to Islam and Islamic thought. It's so frowned upon. Bid'ah. Because when you do bid'ah, you are opening the door to many more bid'ah. When you give a verdict, when you make give an opinion, and it turns out to even be right, you are promoting a methodology that Allah doesn't like. That methodology will lead to Ashura happening. The methodology, the ends never justify the means. The means, the method, Allah says, I have to have signed under this method. So either you're certain and 100% sure, then good for you. You're sanctioned to go and say what you want to say. Because you're 100% sure. Right now, I'm sitting here, you're looking at me, you're 100% sure I'm here, right? Right? You're sure about that. If you're sure about something like this, then bismillah. And if it turns out to be wrong, okay, Allah excuses. But if you're not 100% sure, He says, unless I sign, you're not allowed to follow that method. Even if it turns out to be right. That was the main point we were trying to get across last night. But to demonstrate this and exhibit this, we're gonna go into a specific topic of zuhud, dunya, materialism, pleasure, and stuff like that. We're gonna be talking about these nights to see what Islam's take is in this regard, regarding this subject, this specific subject. Is Islam something that's against dunya? loves dunya, hates dunya. What is it? What's supposed to be the Islamic perspective regarding dunya? We said we're going to discuss this specific topic, but we're going to be aiming for something higher while we reach a conclusion regarding this dunya and what we're supposed to, what our take is supposed to be on this dunya. What we're going to be taking away from this, these, like, let's call it lessons, is to get a little taste of what the methodology really is supposed to be like. And why all these mujtahids and ulama spend all these years in the Hawza, for example, or studying hard, and how this science is not a normal science. Islamic studies are not normal studies. So through this topic, we get a taste of how it works, so that we're more careful from now on, not to do our own little mini ijtihads here and there, and we feel like we know we're doing the right thing. No, no, this is something Islam is very serious about. That's the aim and goal, inshallah. 2 points that I didn't make last night, and I'll just try to rush through it very quickly before we move on, is that sometimes there are people out there, and I've heard people say this, when you tell them, listen, this Islamic concept, so I gave an example last night, right? And once again, I'm going to say it again, I'm not saying, giving this example to show that I'm for it, or I'm not, and I'm not saying I'm against it. I'm just using this because it's a good example, and it's a controversial one. Wilayat al-Faqih, the scope of Wilayat al-Faqih. Okay? When you speak to some people who have opinions in this regard, you tell them, oh, you have to see what the greats say in this regard. You're not up to par with the greats. You can't have an opinion here. What do they tell you? This is the part that's very important. They'll tell you, we are from the school of Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. How dare you tell me not to think? The person who is from, affiliated with, associated with the school of Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam uses his aql. How dare you tell me to not think for myself and to blindly follow the greats? I'm also a great. I mean, that's what this person is indirectly saying. The answer to this is very clear based on what the hadith that we had last night and the stuff that was said last night. That yes, the school of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says think for yourself. If you have the tools for it though. Remember all those names I mentioned last night? This great, that great, that great, that great. They've all spoken about this concept. Have I gone to see what they say? And of course what they say is based on the tradition of Islam. It's not out of their own pocket, out of the blue somewhere. No, no. It's all based on the verses and the hadith that we have. Has this person done it or not? Does he have the tools to do it or not? It's interesting. It takes so long to gain the tools. Once you have the tools, is it enough? No, it's not enough. Once you have the tools, now you have to actually do the research, which takes a lot more time. Have you done this or not? If you have, then Bismillah, Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam says, you're a mujtahid. Do your own thinking. What are you talking about? And that's why, when it comes to ijtihad, we don't care who said what. If a mujtahid is a mujtahid, or if a scholar is a real scholar, a high caliber scholar, even if he hasn't reached ijtihad yet, he won't follow a verdict or an opinion because Imam Khomeini said it. No. You have to see, in these durus of Kharij, those of you who know what Dars al-Kharij is, you have to see how critical the students of the greats are of their teachers when it comes to Dars al-Kharij. It's all about criticizing. Of course, it's not like you tried, the default is that my teacher was wrong. And now, unless proven otherwise. No, no. If it makes sense, if the reasoning matches the claim, they will accept. If it doesn't, they won't say, it's Ayatollah Khoui who said this, so I accept. It's Imam Khomeini, so I said this. No, no, not necessarily. That's how Islamic academia, just like any other academia, works. But the tools, you gotta have it. Sometimes it boils down so much to the point that it's not even something that you learn in the books that will give you the ability to tell what is going on in this hadith or that hadith. Sometimes some of the ulama, they use this term, and I'm sorry, I'm getting a little technical here. They will use the term of madaq, your taste. What does taste mean? It means that this person comes across this hadith, for example. Understanding it is hard. There's different meanings to it that can be understood, but one meaning doesn't match with this person's taste. What does taste mean? It's a fiqhi taste. What does that mean? It means that this person has been involved and engaged with the sources and literature, Islamic literature, for 60, 70, 50 years, to the point that this person, when he hears something from Ahlul Bayt, he knows what they mean, although it might not sound exactly like what they mean. This person will know, because of the familiarity that he has with the way the Ahlul Bayt speak, the way the Quran speaks, this is not what is meant. What's your reason for it? He says, listen, this is my understanding now. Show me why, show me how. This is my taste, he might even say. It doesn't happen often, but every now and then you even hear this. Where is someone supposed to get this from? It's interesting, even in this story of Wilayat al-Faqih, for example, sometimes it boils down to this aspect. For example, one of the greats will say, I have looked into all the sources all these years, and I just can't accept that with all of these rulings that are out there, and all of these statements by Ahlul Bayt that the religion and Islam has to be preserved, all of this, keeping it in mind, I can't not understand how Islam wouldn't push for an Islamic state, for example, an Islamic government, for example. Another will say, I don't have this understanding. I didn't get this feeling from all of these years that I've had in the sources. I don't have it. So brothers and sisters, the point I'm trying to make is that sometimes it's not something that you can even get out of the books. And you have this in every field of study. When someone has a very high level of expertise, it'll boil down to that sometimes. So this is the school. I am from the school of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Imam Sadiq tells me to think. Yes, to think if you have the tools for it. Not generally speaking. Or else you'll end up in the same problem that the people after the Prophet, they got stuck in, which was Qiyas, which the Ahlul Bayt have spoken against so much that I spoke about last night. And this is what one aspect of American Islam that Imam Khomeini said. One aspect of it is this. Now some people say, what do you mean by American Islam? American Islam, it's bad that we're in America? No, it's perfectly fine. This is a land of Allah? That's a land of Allah. The Middle East is a land of Allah. Far East is a land of Allah. Everywhere is the land of Allah. American Islam, when they say is problematic, is this type. Yes, anyone can say anything they want when it comes to the akhirah of the people. You can do whatever you think is right. This is, oh my God, this is shaitan, what he said. This is his mantiq, this is his logic. So this person, not knowing, when he says, we are from the school of Imam Sadiq, we are from the school of Ahlul Bayt, and we're supposed to think, unwillingly, maybe, and unknowingly, he's actually using the logic of those who are against the school of Ahlul Bayt. This is what we were trying to cover last night. Okay? It's very, very important. I should just end it here and leave and I should just leave it at that. It's very important. And it's unfortunate. And our direction, the people. And inshallah they have good intentions, but this is going to cause problems in the long run. So inshallah that's something to keep in mind. Recite salawat, please. Alright, enough introduction. Let's get into business here. The dunya. So this is something the youth, we really love. I'm part of you guys. And at the other hand, we have those who tell us dunya is bad. And they have every right to say that. Why? Because we have different literatures with that imply different things. What we're going to be doing is try to figure out what is the one perspective of Islam when it comes to dunya. What do I mean by dunya? I don't have to explain it. We're living in it. The material world, the desires we have, the pleasures, the good stuff. In one word, material. The material realm of existence that we're in right now, which they say is the lowest level of existence. Before even getting to those literatures, brothers and sisters, what do? We establish our asl. Our asl. The principle. Let me give you an example. When you're doing theology, when you're doing Islamic kalam, Islamic theology, do they start when they're speaking about God and God's attributes? Those of you who might have studied it a little bit. You open the book of theology right there from the beginning, Islamic theology. Right there in the beginning it says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, the Quran says God is one. The Quran says God is not material. Is it like that? Or no, does it start with a logical sequence? It starts with, let's start with existence. Where did existence come into existence? Design, I don't know, fitra, stuff like that. Axiomatic propositions. It starts with those. Aqli, intellectual things first, and then slowly you work your way down, and then you reach what the Quran said, what Ahlul Bayt have said, and so on. That's how it is. You start from the top and you work your way down. So for example, when you start with Islamic theology, you will reach the conclusion that God is not material. If He's not material, can He have a hand or can He not have a hand? He cannot have a hand because He's not material. So then we have verses, Yadullah fawqa aydihim, Allah's hand is on their hand. What do? You say, okay, what is meant here isn't its literal meaning. You reinterpret it. You interpret it in another way. Same thing here as well. Let's go first to aql and to some of those more general naql statements that we have from the Quran, from the Ahlul Bayt. Establish a principle by which we can understand what the Quran and Ahlul Bayt are saying regarding dunya, and then we will move on into the details of what they have said. So let's start with the ration, with intellect. What does the aql, the intellect, say when it comes to the dunya? All we can say is, we can ask our aql one thing. Is the dunya, or let's call it the material world, is it something, can it be something inherently evil and bad or not? Before we move on into the details. Can it even be? So that if we come across literature that says, that implies that it is inherently bad, we say that's not what the verse or the hadith means. Can it be? Let's break down what this material world is all about. Material world, the only thing that you can find in it that is bad is that the fact that it's material. That's all you can find. What else can you have in it that's bad? Scorpions and roaches and stuff, are those bad? Inherently evil. All of these things are the creation of Allah. Why did Allah create the universe to begin with? They say He is Fayyad. He is overflowing grace. It is His overflowing grace that pushes Him to create constantly and constantly. Okay. So if creation, material being part of creation, is a result of Allah's overflowing grace, can Allah even create something that is inherently evil? Shaitan, is he inherently evil? Roaches and scorpions, are they inherently evil? Earthquakes, are they inherently evil? No, it can't be. Why? Because it's a result of Allah's overflowing grace that they come into existence. So theologically, from the start, right there, boom, it's over. It's not inherently bad. The way some people deal with it or speak about it, that it's inherently bad. No, no. What do we conclude? That inherently it's not bad, but, this is important, but something, if it's going to be bad, something else is going to make it bad. Like tea, right? Tea is not inherently sweet. So if you take a sip of tea and you see that it's sweet, what can you conclude from this? That its sweetness came from somewhere else. That's what you conclude. You can't ask the same question about sugar. Why is this sugar sweet? You gotta get a checkup. Because sweetness is an inherent. Don't ask why is sugar sweet. But you can ask why is tea sweet. So when we negate the inherent evilness of dunya, what are we after? To prove that in and of itself, it's not bad. And for this, it's enough for us to say that theologically, it's impossible for it to be bad inherently. Because it's coming from the overflowing grace of God, but it's going against the grace of God. So this is the first step forward that we have. So if we have literature that might imply that it's inherently bad, what do? We say that's not what it means. We can't. The same way we say it can't mean that Allah has a hand. When the Quran says Allah has a hand. The Quran is saying Allah's hand is on their hands. How dare you go against the Quran? And some extremist ideologies are like this. They say God is sitting up somewhere on his throne and he has hands and feet and so on. So now right here, let me open a parenthesis. Someone will say, okay, you just used the aql to establish a principle, and now you're going to be looking at all the hadith and verses of Quran through this lens, through these glasses that you put on. This opens a can of worms. Why? Because lots of people say, for example, today they will tell you, my aql says that hijab, for example, is not for today. So, I have glasses now, and I'm going to look at all the hadith and verses of Quran that speak about hijab. I'm going to look at them through these glasses. Right? Mr. Glasses, talking about glasses and stuff. Yeah, I got one. I got a pair too. What's the difference between this and that? I don't know if I should answer or let you think about it till tomorrow night. We might not get to it, so let me just talk about it now. That's just very simple. There's different types of aqls, and there's an aql that is influenced by different things. That's not the aql that's being spoken about. One and two. The aql that is resorted to when it comes to understanding these concepts is the aql that speaks about the possibility and impossibility of things. In other words, that philosophical form of aql. Stripped of all emotions, stripped of all influences. The aql that says, for example, 2 + 2 = 4. That's what we're talking about. So, when it comes to hijab, someone will say, I don't think that's for today. That's one thing. But that's not the question that we're trying to address. The question that's being addressed, is it possible for it to be for today or not? Yes, it's possible for it to be for today too. No impossibility there. Do you get what I'm trying to say? If it's possible for Allah to have, for example, hijab for today, does that mean that Allah is not all wise? Does that mean that Allah, that it's gonna lead to a limitation in Allah? No, it doesn't. None of these problems will come up. So it's not impossible. Now you can say he doesn't want it for today, that's one thing. But you can't say it's impossible for him to want it from me today. We're talking about possibility and impossibility. What, in this dunya, it's impossible for Allah to create something inherently evil. It's impossible. Because it's coming from His overflowing grace. This is the lens I'm talking about. Yes, if you have something like that, you can look at the verses of the Quran through those glasses. You can look at the hadith through those glasses, but you have to make sure you're on the same page here. Once again, it gets very dangerous, very precise. That's why we don't follow our own understanding when it comes to fiqh. We go to ulama. They try to put that part of their aql aside and just go to the hadith and try to understand what the hadith are saying. Or else we'll mess up. So that's the difference. It's a philosophical mind versus an emotional mind type of thing. Alright, having said that, that's the adl part. So we established this principle, but we also have literature that also establishes this principle. That lets us know that it won't be inherently bad. Now, if something else makes it bad, that's another story. We have to see. But it won't be inherently bad. What are those literature, for example? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran, He says, قُلْ مَنْ حَرَّمَ زِينَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي أَخْرَجَ لِعِبَادِهِ وَالطَّيِّبَاتِ مِنَ الرِّزْقِ قُلْ هِيَ لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا خَالِصَةً يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ Who has made haram the beauties, the zenat of this world? And Allah is saying it in a scolding tone. Who dares make it haram on the people? But this is dunya, O Allah. He says, I don't care if it's dunya. I akhraja li'ibadih. I made it for my servants. The good stuff of this life. It's not inherently bad. This is also establishing and supporting that same principle that we came to, that it's not inherently bad. Surah A'raf, verse 32. هو الذي أنشأكم من الأرض واستعمركم فيها. This is a cool verse. Verse 61 of Surah Hud. Of course, there's a little bit of a difference of opinion how to do tafsir of this verse, but what I've seen usually, the greats, what they say is that this verse is saying He's the one who originated you from this earth واستعمركم فيها. And He wants you to build it. He wants you to make it a livable place. It's interesting that in Christianity you have this concept of this world and, you know, making this world abundant and a place that's livable and loving it and so on and so forth. I've heard it here and there. We have this in the Quran too. He wants us to build it. He wants us to make it livable. He gives us the raw material. Go do your work. All those stories of Ahlul Bayt and how much they would work, which we probably will get to in the future. If it was inherently bad, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran would say, هو الذي أنشأكم من الأرض. And then, what does He say? He says, and He told you to turn away from this أرض. And don't spend time on it. Rather, build your akhirah. He says, وَاسْتَعْمَرَكُمْ فِيهَا. He wants you to build it. But Allah, it's inherently bad. If it was inherently bad, Allah wouldn't ask us to spend 1 second of our life and the valuable time we have in this life for it. What does that mean? That it is not inherently bad. Alright. Why am I after negating all this evil from dunya and all that? Because I don't want to hear, there's no room for statements like this anymore, where people will come up to you and say, brother, Shaykhna, I've wasted my life. I say, really? What have you been doing? He says, nothing, I was just, I spent my life waking up in the morning, going to work, working, coming home. Next day, same thing, and so on. I wasted my life for this dunya. This is so bad because you are doing something so good, but you're shooting it down yourself. The Prophet, he came to this man, this old man, he had very coarse and thick skin because of all the shoveling he had done for this dunya. The Prophet, they say, he kissed this worker's hand and he said, this is a hand that the fire will never touch. Why is it that when you want to be spiritual, when someone wants to prove their spirituality, first thing they do, or when a lecturer wants to show that, you know, they know what they're talking about, first thing they do, shoot down the dunya. No, if you're going to shoot it down, shoot the bad parts of it down. Say it in a way that people won't understand it like this. That this person after 30, 40 years of doing ibadah every single day because he's going after a halal living so that he doesn't put haram food in the stomach of his family. Because if you put haram in the stomachs of your family, on Ashura, Imam Hussein said, you know why you're standing against me and you're not listening to what I have to say is because you filled your... has been doing this ibadah for all these years of his life because of the way you explained dunya and made it look inherently evil. And when that happens, his intentions get messed up. And when your intentions get messed up, your ibadah won't count as ibadah anymore. There's no room for statements like these anymore. Son, why are you taking pleasure? Why are you having fun? Now guys, don't come tonight and then don't come other nights, you know? Right? We're like talking all good about it and stuff. We'll talk about the other side too, right? But some people frown upon people having fun, taking pleasure in life. We'll talk about that. We'll dissect taking pleasure, inshallah, future nights. There's no room for these things anymore. Alright. Having said all of that, and that it's inherently not evil and so on, we have to move on now to the next stage. The next stage is, let's see what the detailed verse is. After establishing our principle and foundation, what do the detailed verses in a hadith say in this regard? What is out there that implies this? That it's not inherently evil for sure, we're sure about that. But the Ahlul Bayt are telling us, be careful. It's evil. What are we supposed to understand from these? How do we reconcile and so on? Between this principle that we've established and this literature that we have. Let's go to Quran first. I have 4 or 5 verses here that imply that the dunya is not a good place. It's not good. It's bad. And no matter how bad you talk about it, it's still good. You can still talk as much as you want bad about it. For example, Surah An'am verse 32. وَمَا الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَعِبٌ وَلَهُ. Look at the way it says it. Look at the wording. وَمَا إِلَّا. It's not anything but this. That means it's only this. وَمَا الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَعِبٌ وَلَهُ. It is only recreation and child's play and wasting your time and stuff like that. It's only this. So what if Imam Ali alayhi salam comes and says it's not only this? What do we do? What do we do? How do we reconcile? We'll get there inshallah. Another verse. Surah Hadid verse 20, which is a very famous one. اِعْلَمُوا أَنَّمَا الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا لَعِبٌ وَلَهْوٌ وزينة وتفاخر بينكم وتكاثر في الأموال والأولاد كمثل I don't have all the verse here. I think it's كمثل غيث, and then it goes on. I'll read the English for you. Know that the life of this world is just play and diversion and glitter and mutual vainglory, you know, boasting and, you know, oh, he's got this, he's got that, I gotta get better than that, and sit him down, and you know. And covetousness for wealth, you know, greed for wealth. And children, of course back then children were assets, today it's not the case. Like the rain whose vegetation impresses the farmer. Then it withers and you see it turn yellow. Then it becomes chaff. While in the hereafter there is a severe punishment and forgiveness from Allah and His pleasure. And the life of this world is nothing but the wares of delusion. Mata'al ghurur. Something that you are fooled with. Look at that. We should call this verse the dunya disverse. It disses the dunya. Destroys the dunya. 5 things that it describes the dunya with, all of them are bad. So people who have this understanding, it's not their fault. The problem is that these verses have to be bounced off of other verses. The Quran itself tells us, bounce my verses off of other verses. I have mutashabihat and I have muhkamat. I have decisive, clear verses and I have ambiguous, metaphorical verses. Don't follow the metaphorical, ambiguous ones without bouncing them off of this, the more decisive ones, or else you are after fitna. The Quran says, يَبْتَغُونَ fitna. They're after fitna when they do that. Yes, even the Quran can misguide if you take it out of context, if you don't understand it in its entirety. This is one of those verses that we have to bounce off of other sayings and verses. Surah Al-Imran verse 185, وَمَا الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا مَتَاعُ الْغُرُورِ. It's a means of deception. You are deceived by it. Surah Luqman verse 33, فَلَا تَغُرَّنَّكُمُ الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا وَلَا يَغُرَّنَّكُمْ بِاللَّهِ الْغَرُورِ. Don't let the dunya fool you and deceive you. It's as if this guy by the name of dunya, is chasing us, trying to deceive us. It's the bad guy, and we're the good guys. We'll reach the point where Imam Ali explains who the bad guy is, really. Surah Anfal, verse 67, يُرِيدُونَ عَرَضَ الدُّنْيَا وَاللَّهُ يُرِيدُ الْآخِرَةِ. They want the dunya, Allah wants the akhirah. In other words, Allah has turned His back on the dunya. Dunya is bad, or else Allah would want a little bit of it at least. Allah doesn't want the dunya, Allah wants the akhirah. So when you're after dunya, you don't want Allah. Conclusion. Right? So it seems. So it seems. These are the verses that I have. There's other verses too, but and you've probably come across them. Those of us who read that book that's called Quran. And it's interesting. If I tell you right now, in my pocket, I have a little piece of leather from the time of the Imams. If I tell you, I don't. Someone actually thought I did once when I said this. If I tell you I do have a piece of, deer skin or something, on it there are four or five words that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam wrote with his own blessed hand for the Shia of today. Oh my God, you should see the line that will form to see this that I have. But if I tell you 600 pages, the Lord of Imam Sajjad has written for us, has sent for us, you could care less, or I could care less. Yani this, it's the bitter truth. Right? Deen has become things other than Allah and the Quran. The Quran is no longer the measuring stick by which we measure someone, how religious they are, or how understanding of the religion they are. It's other things. Sometimes it's even other things that we use to measure the legitimacy of the birth of some people, subhanAllah. Yeah, there's a problem with this guy. Why? Because of this reason. This reason, where? Show me in the book, in the sunnah, where is it that this is the measuring stick? Nowhere can you find it. That's what happens when we separate from the ulama, the real ulama that point to the Quran. Alright, I think I'm going over my time. I don't know how much time I have, but we have a hadith too that also imply the same thing. That dunya is very, very, very bad. Ugh, disgusting. I'll read some of them. If I get the chance, I'll read all of them. If not, if I feel like I've gone over my time, we'll leave it for tomorrow night. For example, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, إِنَّ الدُّنْيَا لَمَفْسَدَةُ الدِّينِ وَمَسْلَبَةُ الْيَقِينِ. The dunya is something that takes away from your yaqeen. It deprives you of your yaqeen and conviction, of course, in Allah. And لَمَفْسَدَةُ الدِّينِ. It corrupts the deen of one, the religion of one, the Islam of one. So dunya is on one side. You see the polarity here? And on the other side is deen. That's what it's implying. حُبُّ الدُّنْيَا رَأْسُ الْفِتَنُ وَأَسْلُ الْمِحَنَ. You want to know what the root of all problems is? It's dunya. حُبُّ الدُّنْيَا. All the fitnas, they come from this. All of the mihan, the hardships, come from this. حُبُّ الدُّنْيَا. They asked Imam, one of the Imams, Imam Sajjad, I think, alayhi salam, أَيُّ الْأَعْمَالِ أَفْضَلْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ عَزَّ وَجَلْ. Which of actions is the highest in Allah's eyes? He said, after ma'rifatullah and ma'rifatu rasulihi, he says, after knowledge of Allah, knowledge of the Prophet, it is بُغْضُ الدُّنْيَا, to hate the dunya. We'll reach the story where someone tried to act all cool. He came to Imam Ali, speaking bad of the dunya. Imam Ali, man, he answered him. Hating the dunya, بُغْضُ الدُّنْيَا. Imam Sajjad is saying, not me. But what if Imam Ali says something that opposes this? What do we do? Well, we're all entitled to our opinion. We'll choose one for whichever lecture we're giving. And we'll misguide the people. Alhamdulillah. No, we have to either reconcile, fix it up somehow, or if we can't, there's no need to have an opinion. The hadith that I said last night, لو أن العباد إذا جهلوا توقفوا ولم يجحدوا لم يكفروا. If they would stop and not just just spit out opinions when they don't know, then they wouldn't become kafir. And kafir here doesn't necessarily mean that you don't believe in Allah. Maybe it means that they might not have turned away from Allah without even knowing it. This is what Ahlul Bayt are teaching us. This is the school of Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam. This is the school of Imam As-Sadiq. Not that you have to have an opinion always. I'll leave the rest of these ahadith and Nahj al-Balagha inshallah for tomorrow night inshallah. Recite salawat. Assalamu alaikum ya binta Rasulullah ya Fatima al-Zahra. Can we get the lights please? When you have a little bit of time to do big things, you have to make the most of every single second. If you're going to change the course of history, brothers and sisters, and you don't have maybe a 1 or 2 day window, a 1 or 2 hour window for that, to change the course of history, and you want to really change the course of history, every single second and split second will count. Things will happen quicker than you might want or you might expect. And then a domino effect will happen. After the Prophet passed away, something big is supposed to happen. The Khilafah is supposed to shift from one point to another point. You want to change the direction of this shift. It's not going to be easy, but you have a window for it. That's why you're going to make the most of every second of it. They pushed for it. They pushed and pushed. But the problem is one thing, and that is the daughter of the Prophet. She's going to stand in your way. This is where you will understand that if every second counts, I have to do something about this. Either I have to give up what I'm after, or if I'm not going to give up what I'm after, I have to remove this barrier. We have to remove this barrier. That's why according to the Shia school and the sources that we have, and other sources of course of other schools, they say that they came around the home of Fatima, this barrier of Khilafah. They came around. They said, we'll burn the house down. We'll make our way in. Ali has to give bay'ah. The others who are in the home, they have to give bay'ah. Who is Ali? He's the cousin of the Prophet. Who cares? But there's one flower in this home by the name of Fatima. This Fatima can get in the way. The others are Sahaba. But this is the daughter of the Prophet. And she knows this. Who goes behind the door? Fatima al-Zahra goes behind the door. Maybe if I go, these Arabs who have the ghira, who have the honor, they'll know that there's a woman behind this door won't be opened. But before you know it, brothers and sisters, this door is kicked in. She is stuck behind the door, between the door and the wall. Pressure is exerted on Fatima al-Zahra, they say. She says, I've miscarried my son. Muhsin, or Muhassin, this 6-month-old, they say. Brothers and sisters, this 6-month-old, if he had survived, we wouldn't have lost another baby in Karbala. If Muhsin was alive, he would have grown to be a warrior on Ashura when Imam Hussein went out to the army. Abu al-Fadl Abbas is gone. Ali ibn al-Akbar is gone. All the greats are gone. No one's left. There's one little soldier left by the name of Ali ibn al-Asghar. He's crying, saying, oh father, take me so that I do my part. Take me so I do my part. They see Imam Hussein is coming, but he's not coming to fight. He's wearing the cloak of Rasulullah, they say. He's wearing the turban of Rasulullah, they say. Is he holding something precious? That's when he takes out this baby, this poor innocent infant. He takes him out to the sky, he holds him up. I don't know if he was showing this baby to the army, or if he's saying, oh Allah, if the time has come for you to even take my Asghar, now's the time to take him. إن لم ترحموني فارحموا هذا الطفل الرضيع. This baby, this nursing baby, if you're not going to have mercy on me, then have mercy on this baby. أما ألا ترونه كيف يتلظى عطشا. Don't you see how his lips are opening and closing like a fish that's out of water? They say as Imam Hussein was addressing this army, oh people, don't you have a little bit of mercy in your stone hearts? Don't you see my baby is dying out of thirst? As he was speaking, they say, Imam Hussein, he felt this baby shaking in his hand. The blood of Asghar is coming on the arm of Imam Hussein. ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. نسألك اللهم وندعوك باسمك العظيم الأعظم العز الأجل الأكرم بفاطمة وأبيها وبعلها وبنيها والسر المستودع فيها يا الله 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 يا رحمن يا رحيم يا مقلب القلوب ثبت قلوبنا على دينك. اللهم عجل لوليك الفرج واجعلنا من خير أعوانه وأنصاره. اللهم احفظ علماءنا, اللهم احفظ علماءنا وقائدنا, اللهم اشف مرضانا وارحم موتانا وسلم ديننا ودنيانا بمحمد وآل محمد, وعجل اللهم في فرج مولانا صاحب الزمان. صلوات اللهم صلى الله عليه وسلم. And there's a request to please recite a Fatiha for Brother Agha Mirza Abdul Amir, inshallah.
يا زهرة 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 آن دیگر ندارد برگ و بر نخل امیدم یا زهرا، دیگر ندارد برگ و بر نخل امیدم یا زهرا، یا هر نفس می سوزم ای یار شهیدم یا زهرا، با هر نفس می سوزم ای یار شهیدم یا زهرا، 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 دستم گریبان می درد در شام هجران یا زهرا، دستم گریبان می درد در شام هجران یا زهرا، اشکم به دامان می دود چون شمع سوزان یا زهرا، اشکم به دامان می دود چون شمع سوزان یا زهرا، 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 تو رفتی و من ماندم و عشق یتیمان یا زهرا، تو رفتی و من ماندم و عشق یتیمان یا زهرا، تو رفتی و من ماندم و اندوه طفلان یا تو رفتی و من ماندم و اندوه طفلان یا زهرا، من ماندم و زخم تو و قلبی شکسته یا زهرا، من ماندم و زخم تو و قلبی شکسته سر رشته صبر علی از هم گسسته سر رشته صبر علی از هم گسسته زینب که سوزد از غمت بابی شکیبی جای تو میگیرد ز من اشک غریبی یا زهرا، یا زهرا، یا زهرا، یا زهرا، یا زهرا، خاک مزارت گل کنم باش که جاری یا زهرا، خاک مزارت گل کنم باش که جاری یا زهرا، شاید که یک بار دیگر تو سر براری یا زهرا، شاید که یک بار دیگر تو سر براری با هر تپش قلب علی نام تو گوید یا زهرا، با هر تپش قلب علی نام تو گوید با خون چشمان ترش قبرت بشوید با خون چشمان ترش قبرت بشوید یا زهرا، 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 Ya Zahra, Ya Zahra, Ya Zahra, Ya Zahra, Ya Zahra, Ya Zahra, Salam aleyke Ya Seyyidatin Sa'il Alemin يا فاطمة الزهراء يا أم أبيها الصلاة عليك يا صاحب الزمان يا بقية الله أجرك الله في مصيبة أمك السلام عليكم يا أهل بيت النبوة جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته
أحسنتم تقبل الله السلام عليك يا رسول الله السلام عليك يا أمير المؤمنين السلام عليك يا فاطمة الزهراء السلام عليك يا حسن بن علي السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله أيها الشهيد بكربلاء عطشانا السلام على تسعة المعصومين من ولد الحسين السلام عليك يا غريب الغرباء السلام عليك يا معين الضعفاء والفقراء السلطان أبا الحسن علي بن موسى أيها الرضا ورحمة الله وبركاته السلام عليك يا مولانا يا صاحب الزمان الأمان 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 من فتن الزمان عجل الله تعالى فرجك وسهل الله تعالى مخرجك وظهورك السلام عليكم جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته